Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the front porch. My name is Dennis Rogers, and I'm joined by Michael Daniels. How's it going, Mike? How was your Monday?
Terrible. I can't get a dice combination and can't stop to save my life. It's terrible. It's the worst game in the world. And we're talking about the game Word Game Can't Stop. What is that an old game? I'm assuming it's an old game, right?
It's pretty old, yeah. I mean, I think the strategy is not to stop.
Yes, but that's the problem, is that I never stop, and then I don't win. I thought the name of the
game. You bust. I'm not great at that game either.
I mean, it's on Board Game Arena, listeners. If you're wondering what it is, you can go and play it. It takes like a whole, I don't know, 5 minutes if you're just kind of playing with two players or something. But it's also very simplistic and silly.
It's to my mind, it's maybe one of the best three-player games that I've ever played. It's on Board Game Arena. In person, it's pretty terrible.
Because you have to do all the math or combinations of the dice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be rough. Anyway, I'm playing it
really
with
really slows the game down in person.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, and online on Board Game Arena, you can just, it'll say, here's your options. Which one do you want? Which is kind of cool. Were you playing any games on Board Game Arena these days? What's your regular thing? I'm assuming you're still playing Heat. Most people will hold on to that one for a
while. Yeah, we just wrapped up a Heat game.
Do you play any of those tournaments that they play? Because I've seen people play like tournaments with that.
I have been dabbling in tournaments. I played a Martian Dice tournament, if you know Martian Dice. That's a sequel, I believe, to Zombie Dice.
I do like Zombie Dice.
It's super simple. The dice have...
Oh, it's the cows, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cows. You're playing as Martians.
Yes.
And you want to abduct as many cows, chickens, and humans as you can.
Not necessarily in that order. You can...
Yeah.
I mean, if those are aliens, those are just the faces. You can go for humans first, right? Like if you're from the...
Yeah, I'm not sure how the faces are distributed on the dice, but there are cows, chickens, humans, flying saucers, and tanks. The tanks represent the military, the human military, and the flying saucers are your ships that fight off the military. So it's a push your luck. You keep rolling until you decide to stop or you bust. But every time you roll a tank, that tank is already, like, the tanks are auto-selected, right? You have to keep any tanks that you roll.
Yes.
And after that, so you roll the dice, you set aside any tanks, and then you get to keep one type of die face to keep. And if you ever get to a point where you either can't make a choice, because I think you can only take the things that you're abducting, you can only take once each. Like, once you take cows, you can't take cows again. And if you stop or you have used all the dice, you compare the tanks with the flying saucers, and if you have equal to or greater flying saucers than tanks, then you score 1 point for every cow, chicken, or human, and you get a bonus if you get some of each. It's like a 3-point bonus or something. I don't know. Board Game Arena does the math.
Yeah.
But if you ever have more tanks than flying saucers and you can't take, like, you know, if you have two more tanks than flying saucers and you only have one die left or something, then you bust and it goes to the next person. And you just go around until somebody has 21 or something. It's quick and simple. I don't know why. I feel like we play it more than we play Zombie Dice. I'm pretty sure Zombie Dice was the first one of these, which had a similar
thing. You play that game. I own it, but you played Zombie Dice for like 10 minutes, and you've played 70 games in that time, and then you never play it again. Basically, right?
Yeah, that might be all it is. Similar kind of thing. But I did that in a tournament. I think I won two games and then got out. It was single elimination. The tournament I'm in now is for Space Base.
Okay, yeah, I know that.
What's annoying about this is that it's a five-player game where the Martian Dice tournament was two-player,
Yeah.
which is kind of a weird way to play Martian Dice, but that's what it was. And I don't know, the game went faster, whatever. The space-based games, I always get opponents all over the globe. I think I'm in my third game of the tournament. And I can only tell by the flags, so I don't know what time zone people are in, but you select your language, your flag. One says Israel, two say Germany, and one says Japan.
Okay.
So all over, and like in my first game, there were two people in Australia, one Canadian and one French or something. One, no, maybe one French and one in Scandinavia somewhere. And the trouble with that is that there's a timer for the whole game. It's fairly generous. It's like 48 hours.
Okay.
Maybe not even that much, but the time never goes up, right? So if it's not my turn, I have to wait for, one of the Germans or the person in Japan to take their turn. They might take their turn at like 3 a.m. here,
Right,
in
yeah.
U.S. Eastern time. And then I'm asleep until 8 or 9 in the morning. And so I've just lost 6 hours off of my timer, assuming that I get on and check it first thing in the morning,
Right.
which is not always the case, because I'm used to playing with our friends where we're pretty casual about the timers and,
Right.
that kind of thing. Like I feel like I take my turns pretty fast. I actually did the thing. Board Game Arena doesn't have an iOS app, but you can do the thing where you put the website on your app screen, your home screen,
Okay.
and can enable notifications that way, and you do get mobile notifications when it's your turn. That was working for a while on my phone, like when before the Eclipse weekend and stuff. But it stopped working now, so I won't know, and lose a bunch of my time. I'm actually in the negative in this game, but they have not skipped me yet. The first two games I was in, somebody got skipped, and I don't know exactly the sequence of events. I think in a tournament, Board Game Arena counts it the same whether somebody gets skipped or they quit.
Okay.
And what happens is that person is out of the game. And then the game is just null for purposes of tournaments. Well, not null. What happens is they're out, and everybody else has the option to quit or keep going, but they're gonna continue in the tournament regardless. I don't know what the because it's not two player single elimination, and I remember from when we played around with this a year or so ago. There are a lot of different settings for tournaments in Board Game Arena. You can do round robin and single elimination and double. There's all this stuff. We did it wrong one time, and it was like a two player like patchwork or something, where everybody played with everybody else, which might be what round robin means. I don't remember. And when the tournament started, suddenly everybody had like 8 games of patchwork because we got matched up with like every combination of two players.
Right.
But yeah, I'm in the third game because my first two games were sort of forfeits where everybody except the person who ran out of time just got to advance.
Gotcha.
So it's weird. Whatever. If I won't be too upset if I get knocked out in this and don't have to stress about this timer anymore.
Yeah, that's it. That would be a problem for me is with those is that you have to be online and know it and kind of pay attention and always be checking. You know, I'm known that I only take turns when I'm at the computer. I guess it's not. It's like I go and look on my phone to make sure to take turns or things like that. And So if I'm at work or something, I'm usually doing work, but occasionally, you know, I take a break and check over it, but I don't actually actively remember to do my turns except once a day. I will always come into work, sit down, do my stuff, or before I leave.
Right.
But I couldn't do the, I got to check it again. I've got a timer counting down and stuff like that. So that's rough.
Yeah, I was going better when I had the notifications going, because I'm the same way. Like, I'll check it once or twice a day, and if I don't have too many games going, you know, we have a couple of our friends who, you know, don't get on when they're working or whatever. They only get on once a day, and so I won't have that many turns to take at any given time.
I'm currently playing. I might have mentioned I've been introducing some people to Board Game Arena in the last like 3 months or so.
Oh yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, so I'm getting, I think I've got at least two of them hooked as like regulars, rabid. Okay, I love this Board Game Arena thing, and then the other two are, they like it, but they take a turn every 3 days. Type thing. And after we complain about them not taking turns, just, you know. Some people are like that. But so we've got multiple types of games going on for different people. I started just today, a Terraforming Mars game, which I've never played before. So I'm got to do a how-to video on that.
Yeah. That's one I've never played either.
I've heard good things, and I know really everybody might talk about it. So,
I think I own it on Steam.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe I should get it on Steam and learn that one. I'm playing Heat Pedal to the Metal and Can't Stop, which is, you know, three levels of different kinds of stuff with different people. But yeah. Beyond the Board Game Arena thing, I've been playing a little bit of Stardew Valley multiplayer. Not much, just a little bit, because now we've got like a multiplayer server and it's different. It's kind of like every time I get on, it's a different game. I mean, I had the same kind of thing with Factorio, is that, you know, you just got to get on and assess the situation and then do something, not get on and like, oh, because a lot of times when I play these kind of games or just games in general that have a progression to them, I'm like, I want to get on to, you know, I'm looking forward to getting on and working on that corn crop, right? And so I can make some progress on that. But then you get online and you're like, oh, they're not doing corn anymore. It's three seasons later and they're doing pumpkins, and there's pumpkins and stuff here. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll do that, you know, or something.
Right.
So it's not like one that I do. And a weird part about like the way we're doing it is it's a server, but most people aren't playing at the same time. So it's just someone gets on, does a thing by themselves, then gets off, then someone else does a thing. So
right.
It's a weird feeling that I'm in a multiplayer game. It's a single player game that has AI do things with me when I'm offline, you know. It's not AI, it's people. But
yeah, I've not played a ton of Stardew Valley, and I never owned it on the Switch. I maybe played my sister's copy, or maybe played it on her Switch before I got a Switch. But I played it a little bit when they put it on iOS.
Yeah, I did. I definitely played it on iOS. Yeah,
some of the controls were a little wonky, but otherwise it was a very I remember it being a pretty good adaptation. And then it went on sale a couple weeks ago on Steam for just like, it was $6 or something. And I was like, what the heck? I'll buy that.
Yeah.
And I got on it a couple times last weekend when we were all at Trotsky's and realized like, oh, I don't remember any of this stuff. And so we're going around and doing some of the mining stuff and whatever. I didn't know that. I mean, I guess I heard people talking about it that people were getting on and doing stuff in there.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's good and cool. But the when I played Stardew Valley on the it was iPad at the time, and I really, really enjoyed it. The thing that made me stop playing it, but it's also a good thing about it, is that I think it's the same thing, although I've not played it with the Animal Crossing games, is that, well, only this event happens in this time of the year or something, right? So you can go online and say, and probably it's better, maybe it's just better if you don't go online with some of these games, But if you say, what's the best, you know, you see all these kind of crops. Let's say it's a crop game, which this one happens to be. And what kind of crops should I build? Should I do corn? Should I do wheat? Should I do tomatoes or whatever it might be? And you go online, they're like, okay, what you want to do is you want to get strawberry seeds. And strawberries are available during the spring festival. And if you cross those with the thing that's only available during the egg festival, then you get the best ratio to price to cost ratio for the rest of the game. You're like, oh, cool. The egg festival was last week, and now I've got to wait like 3 months of real time before it comes back around again. And I'm like, I can ignore that, but my brain can't, right? Like, I'll be buying wheat from then on thinking, man, I really screwed up by not buying those strawberries, you know,
right,
when they were available. And Stardew Valley has a lot of that kind of stuff because it's on cycles, yeah, and seasons and things. Unlike Animal Crossing, it's real time, which makes it worse. But
oh, yeah. I think that might be part of why I never really got into it, because when I thought about, like, what should I be doing? What are my goals in this game?
Mm-hmm.
I often felt like I needed to play with a wiki open.
Oh, yeah, I can see that for sure, yeah.
Because there's all the, like, the different NPCs, and you can do romance, relationship, you know, stuff with them that seems to be, and then all the stuff you said about the crops. With some things, like, I did that a little bit with Factorio. I remember reading, Minecraft. I remember reading an article years ago about how many kids were playing Minecraft, and before the console versions and stuff, it's very, how do I want to say this? Like, there's no tutorials or anything. There's no recipe book. There is in the console versions now, but the original version, you just had to know, like, if you line up the parts like this in the 3x3 crafting grid, it's going to make this. This is a shovel. This is a pickaxe. This is a regular wood axe. You know, if you do this and this, it makes a torch. If you do this and this, it makes arrows. And if you're playing with other people, that's part of the experience, right? You're like, hey, how do I do this? And you're like, oh, you put wood like that and then like that. And you do it. And, like, eventually, if you're playing solo, you do have to look stuff up. But it's something that I think for a lot of, you know, certain type of kid, like it really enhanced the community of it and whatever. But Stardew Valley is a single player game. I mean, we're playing multiplayer, but it was designed as a solo game. And so, yeah, I felt like, I was like, oh, okay, so if I want my character to get this girl, I have to find this kind of flower, and I have to give it to her on March 3rd, which is her birthday, and I gotta remember all that. And I was just like, you know what, I don't, it's like Pokemon, but without, with a different kind of grinding. Because I don't want to say without grinding, because there's definitely still grinding, Pokemon probably has more grinding. But Pokemon also felt like, okay, I either have to memorize this wheel of like 14 types or whatever to take into combat and like swap them in and out all the time in a kludgy console interface without a mouse, you know, or I'm just going to struggle through it and nothing. And another thing, I think, I don't know, I feel like I'm just bagging on Stardew Valley. I'm just trying to remember / explain why I never really got into it. I think the other thing is it has this day cycle that it takes you a while to figure out how to, like, really get your character enough energy.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like you wake up and you're like, okay, what I need to do is clear out this space so I can plant crops. So I'm going to chop down this tree. I'm going to clear this rock. I'm going to chop down this tree. And if you just do that, as soon as your character wakes up, they're going to be exhausted before noon. And at the beginning, you don't have any resources. So you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go back to bed, I guess.
Yeah.
And it gave the game this sort of, play cycle that, like, gave me, like, easy off ramps, right? Yeah, like, yeah. I'd go through, I'd do a day, I'd do another day, and I'm like, well, my character's got to go to bed again. I think I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah.
Right? It didn't keep me in the game in a way that a lot of other sort of mindless games like that do.
I can believe that. And I think that's, you know, I had that kind of stuff with it. It definitely felt fun. You're right. We're both kind of bagging on it. It definitely feels fun and I like it a lot. And there's lots of things to do. It's cutesy. It's not complicated. And it gets a little bit of options and stuff. But it did have... Well, another thing, too, is that you have to run to town back and forth all the time. And it's not a big mm-hmm. deal because there's just like one long screen in between running to town and then across town to get to the store. And that gets better as you get better things. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's like a horse or speed stuff or whatever. And that's kind of the point of it. But for that first bit, like that first half of the game, you're just like... Walk, you know. And then if you're mm-hmm. looking for a certain shell, you've got to walk around the beach forever hoping to find a random thing that might come up. And it's like, that's kind of cool, but I just don't feel like I'm controlling a lot. And then, yes, totally. I absolutely agree with I want to romance this person, but I have to do this specific thing to do this thing or say this other thing. If I don't, then I'm kind of screwed forever. And so... Like I said earlier, I could not play with those things and just play it normal, but it just, in the back of my head, I can't. I'm like, I'm not optimizing sure. things or not doing what I needed to do, just the way my brain works. Anyway, Stardew Valley, that's on a multiplayer thing. I am playing Soulstone Survivors again. It came out. They had a weird thing. It's I don't know if you ever played Vampire Survivors or something like that, but it's a Survivors game.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, and it's
I played those both. Some of my internet friends were playing Vampire Survivors, and I think you told me about Soulstone Survivors, and I played the hell out of it for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. I accidentally clicked it right now. I didn't close this. They put a patch like so. First off, when we played it, it was in beta or whatever it's called, early access, right? It felt like it was a fun game in itself, but it was clearly not finished. It had more tracks to go and characters and weapons that they needed to do. And then just fixing the game in general with some stuff, but it was still a fun game. Now, since then, we're like a year or so later, they have launched in 1.0 and put out a couple different like expansion patches from it since then, which is pretty cool. I have not kept up with it, so I didn't really know. And I decided to just, update it and patch it and play it, and it's real fun. One thing that kind of brought it to my attention was that their patch note for like the re-release was like, we're re-releasing the patch. And I was like, what? So evidently they put out a big huge update, like a really changed characters a whole bunch, changed a lot of the way things work in the game, and added tons of new weapons and characters and stuff all at once. And then it got huge confusion from the users, their clients or whatever. And they were like, And they were like, hey, we don't necessarily like this or don't know. And it was just a ton of stuff. It wasn't really a positive. So they rolled it back, which I've never seen in a game. Took the patch out and put it back to the other one. Put in a mini patch, which is fixed the bugs that they did in that one thing, and then redid stuff again. And now this patch was okay. We're re-releasing it with the feedback that you all gave us from the first time. That's a weird thing. And I was like, cool. This is a huge update and has been, customer base approved, user approved. So I'll start playing. And I did, I haven't played a ton of it, but I played several hours of it. And it's fun. It's from where they were before to, in early access to now. They clearly have made a lot of updates and upgrades and balance changes. And I hit kind of a wall where it was really too hard for me to progress. And I couldn't see things. Like, it just got too big on the screen, too much explosions and stuff. And then I had to go and change settings to put things down and tweak it. Now they've kind of... They did that yourself. Like, it automatically does some things. If you get too much, it dims other things. And, just stuff that you do through an early access and learn. But now in the live version, it's fixed. And then now they have full tech trees that they didn't have before, and character specializations, and more weapons for each character, and new spells and abilities. And then there's not the wall either where you hit that things are so difficult. It's much more smooth and I can actually progress. So either way, overall, it's been a good progression from where it was in early access when I played to now. And I really want to play it. The best thing about it is that it's just a pick up and play type thing. You know, you can play one go at it for a while, like that was real fun, and then put it down. And you've made some progress, you know.
Yeah.
And each time on those roguelites, you know, you've added some money or gotten some experience or something. So you've done a little bit. So, and I like that. I need a lot of those games. Those are, you know, sometimes when I'll go in there and I've got a bunch of housework to do, and I'm like, I really want to carve out myself to play some games today, but I'm going to feel guilty if I don't get these windows done. So I want a game that I can just sit down, play a little bit, and then go do other stuff. And those games fit that for me, or like a Hades or anything like that. I can't sit down and play a V Rising or Final Fantasy game.
Right. Okay. I have been doing a similar thing. I was playing Factorio before we started the Stardew Valley server. I was playing Factorio with Fox's son and our buddy Chris. And I think Zahn and his daughter got on like the first day that we launched the server, and then I've not seen them since. But I hit a certain point where like I was doing, it was like me playing a solo game, but every once in a while, Nathan would get on and do something. And just as I always do with that game, like, was obsessed with it for a couple months, because I went straight from a solo game into that multiplayer game. But I was waiting for, there's a big 2.0 update to another factory game called Captain of Industry that I'm pretty sure I've talked about before, because I got super into it a year or so ago when it came out, and I'd been kind of wanting to give it another shot before I started up with Factorio again a few months ago, because I would see the updates on Steam. Every time I got on Steam to play Baldur's Gate or something else, because it was Baldur's Gate for a few months, I would see updates, right? They would post news updates on games that I own, and they didn't, like, the changes aren't huge. It's a lot of like, I don't want to say quality of life, but it's what they call quality of life. Like, they added more graphics to like the water and the grass, and you can see the shadows of the clouds across the land, and they added textures, like you can put pavement on the ground so it's not just dirt everywhere, and some of this kind of stuff. But whenever I thought about playing that game, I'm like, I should wait for that update. Like, they're going to do that update and everything's going to be different. A lot of it's minor stuff. Like, the biggest difference is that, and it's the difficulty of the game is very customizable. But they added a feature called ore sorting, where a big part of the game is excavators and trucks. Like, the excavators will dig up whatever from the ground and put it in trucks.
Okay.
And when they dig, right, like when there's copper ore in the ground, there's like dirt and stone on top of it usually.
Okay.
And you have to dig through that to get to the ore. Well, normally the excavators would just pick up whatever, dump it all in the trucks, and then the trucks would go and distribute. Like, they'd put the ore in the bucket for the ore, they'd put the dirt in one for the dirt, and so on. They added a machine that sorts those things out. So if a truck has mixed cargo, as they say, it has to go to an ore sorter that'll sort the different things and send them in conveyor belts to the different containers. It's kind of a minor thing, and it's something you can turn off if you don't want, because it makes it a little more difficult. But I've been, you know, playing way too much of that for like the past week, because the update came out on the 5th, April 5th, when we were at Trotsky's. And so almost as soon as I got home, I patched that game and started a new run, and I'm doing a map. I'll put a link to this, because some of this won't make sense if you don't know what the game is like, but I'm doing a map with a giant crater in the middle, and the stuff with the excavators and trucks is kind of tedious. And I mean, like, you make plans, right? You put little markers on the ground, say like, I want you to mine here. I want the trucks to dump here, so it'll level stuff out. But the different materials have different, like, slippage. It's very, it tries to be very realistic, right? So if I want a ramp to go up from one elevation to the other because the mountain is too steep for the trucks and excavators to drive up, I have to build that up. But if I build it up out of dirt or trash from my town, it's going to spread, right? It's going to spread out pretty far before it gets to the height that I need it to be. Okay. But if I do that with rock or limestone or even slag that comes out of my blast furnaces that liquefy the ore into molten iron or copper, it won't slide as far. So you have to decide, like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to build this ramp. I'm going to dig and build, because you kind of want stuff close together, right? If you just have excavators dig all the way down to the crater, they can do that, but it's going to take ages because it's going to pull all this extra material and the trucks have to find somewhere to put it. So what I ended up doing was sort of splitting the difference, where it's like, okay, I want you to mine here and dump here, like right next to it, so that you're half building up the ramp and half cutting into the side of the mountain to dig it. And it's harder to describe without actually seeing it, but I'll put a link to the Steam. Anyway, I've been playing a lot of that.
Nice. I mean, the quality of life updates are always kind of nice. Even if they don't add like new content, it's like, man, it's so much easier. Now it makes the game enjoyable, or if they've got inventory sorting, or not just in factory games, but anything, you know, like, oh, like if Diablo had quality of life and like they made things stack that are in a certain size, or like, oh, no more collecting potions type thing, you know, it makes it more fun to play. And those are always worth it for sure. Okay, cool. I watched a little bit more Shogun this week. Love that show. Watched two more episodes of it. There's 8 out right now, so I'm catching up. Are you all the way caught up to episode 8?
I think I have one more. Let me check. I've not seen episode 8.
It's a long show. Like, they're an hour long. Right. And I really enjoy it. So sometimes I'll get to where I put it on and then I'll get distracted by something, or something will come up and I'll get moving. I can't just let it play and do stuff. I have to like pause it and pay attention. And cause I'm really, all the little nuances of it are pretty good. But,
that's definitely true for me, but I'm watching the real Japanese version and not a filthy English dub.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. I in non-spoiler stuff, I guess it's spoiler. I don't know if knowing some people are alive is a thing. I finished episode 3 and I'm still liking John Blackthorne. He's English, the English guy. Liking his character. You had mentioned several times in the past when you were reviewing this that the lady, the actor from Godzilla, is in this one, and you said that she was better, and I agree. I don't know what makes her better. It's maybe that she doesn't have to, because of who she's portraying, like a historical Japanese woman here, at least in the first three episodes, they're kind of supposed to be like pristine, or they don't move a lot, or they don't act a lot. They don't show emotions. You know, they're not supposed to do that way. It's proper type stuff. Sure. So it's not like you rely a lot on her face acting or her to give emotional acting performances, right? Like Godzilla, yeah, where she has to carry the show when she does a terrible job of it.
The character is, as some would say, stoic.
Stoic, right. So being that way, you don't have to necessarily act a whole lot. Not that she doesn't, but up to this point, she's not had to show big acting chops, and she works fine. Like, it's totally great. She's actually, I think she's likable because she's playing opposite a pretty good, interesting character and person, which is John Blackthorne. And he's her only, at this point, he's really her only, she's really his only contact to what's going on at all.
Right.
Because she's his translator. So that's pretty cool. I did get to see a part where they showed, last week I talked about how the Japanese are hardcore, and one guy had to like kill himself and his entire lineage, which means his son. And they showed that guy's wife, like sitting, she got delivered two boxes of ashes, one of her husband and one of her son. And I'm like, geez, man, do they have to keep reminding me of how terrible that whole thing is? I have a feeling she's going to do something crazy, but still, I'm like, they just keep bringing that back about how awful that was. That somebody, and I keep thinking, somebody was out there and murdered a little baby. They had a little baby and were like, slice. Golly, geez. I can only assume it was the dad, but they didn't show that off screen. Something I like about, another spoiler-free thought with that film or that show is I wasn't as aware of Christianity, be it Catholicism or Protestantism, being such a big effect on Japanese history and culture.
And yeah,
this is really showing, that's the real part of Shogun. If at this point, after three episodes in, and someone said, what's Shogun about? I would say it's the Protestant, it goes with a fight for the crown, we'll say, to a lay person, a fight for the crown with five great houses, and how the Protestants and Catholics affected Japan. That's what I would say Shogun's about. I don't know if that changes anyway, but that's what it seems to be about.
I think it seems fairly accurate, right? It's a culture clash, I'm sure, is an expression I've used multiple times describing this. And it's the thing where, like, I don't think it's always super obvious when you have these kinds of, not quite holy wars, but like what seem like holy wars. And they're often still just like political power, right? Like, not that there aren't people on both sides who feel incredibly strongly about their faith and about any other faith, or particularly in the case of Protestant Catholics, like of the other, but people who are neither will just call them both Christianity, right? Like they have mostly the same Bible. They have the same God, the same Jesus, you know,
so much
of the doctrine is the same.
The non Christian Japanese people call all either sides Christians.
Exactly. Exactly. Like they're both sides are ostensibly following Christ, right? That's what Christian means.
Correct.
And so in situations like Protestants and Catholics in Ireland, right, which is a more recent supposedly religious divide, it really And again, not that faith was not important to the regular folk, but the free, the independent Irish, the Republic of Ireland, were Catholic because Catholicism was a big part of their history and their tradition from, you know, missionaries and like what remained of the Roman Empire coming over there and St. Patrick and all of that stuff. And the English were Protestant. They were Church of England, the Anglicans, right? Like a big part of, and it's like the English Protestants are different still from like the Dutch Reformed and the Lutherans and in, you know, Germany and all of that stuff. Because the Church of England was not tied, but like sort of created with Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Right, who wanted to divorce the queen, but Catholics didn't get divorced in that time. And so he like converted the whole country to Protestantism, and it became the Church of England. But anyway, there's like all this, you know, complicated history involved in too. But the conflict in Ireland was really about independence versus oppression and exploitation by England. And it just so happened that, and I don't mean just so happened, because this is part of it too, that the Irish who wanted to be independent were mostly Catholic, and the Irish who wanted to stay part of the UK were mostly Church of England, were Protestant.
Yeah.
And so you look at it and like, oh, it's this weird fight between the Protestants and Catholics over, you know, what's Ireland going to be between these two? And it's really more political than spiritual, than religious. But yeah, I've gone way off field with this.
That's an important thing.
Yeah, the story in Shogun is a little bit like, it's not like for the priests, I'm sure a big part of it is like, we're going to claim Japan for the Catholic Church. John Blackthorne is not a very religious or spiritual person. But he, being English, identifies himself as Protestant, as Church of England, and therefore in this time in 1600s hates all the Catholics. And he might hate the Spanish or Italians or French anyway, just being English, even if they all had the same faith, right? Like that.
Right.
it's just another thing stacked on top of, you know, the conflict that went back and forth in Europe for centuries.
Correct. And here we see that kind of front and center, you know, with a lot, everything that they do, because it's one third of the five families, you know, two of them, that's two fifths, I guess, are Christian, and they are, it's very important that everything they do in the political arena has to do with that. And they're for two very big reasons. One is money. Like, a guy is beholden to the church because they give him lots of money. And the other one is a Christian because he's dying. You know, he's got leprosy. The show is just kind of giving us a slice of two very specific facets of, you know, politics and faith with these two characters, but they're very important, you know. And some people may turn them off when they're like, I don't know if I want to watch a show and it's about religion. Well, anything in history is about religion. It was such a dominant thing in the world, still is today. You can't not talk about it. And if you're not addressing it some way, a little bit, in your historical show, then you're silly. This is just a very kind of important part to it. And how they show it.
Yeah, I would say the religious divide is context. It's in the periphery of the story.
Yeah.
It's definitely not, you know, a central or major.
It's not about that, but
yeah, it's not about that is a good way to say it.
Yeah. And I like I said, I like all the characters. Still like the main actor. That's the Toshi. I forget his whole name. He's Scorpion. I'm just going to say that's what he is. From Mortal Kombat. Great actor, still fantastic. He's got a lot of tricksy things he does to him. Smart leader, but also, you know, knows how to game the system type stuff. And Blackthorn's the wrench in the work often. And it feels all very believable for the time period. They're getting ready to go into war, so that'll be interesting. I tell you, the thing that I most compare it to the other show is definitely The Last Kingdom. And I do that because The Last Kingdom shows another period in history about how we all know that Vikings invaded like Scotland, right? They came down and invaded the British Isles from Norway, and they would raid them and destroy villages. And I don't think it's a harsh saying that they would rape and pillage and kill and murder and steal and rob and then leave and go home. That's part of their culture back then. It totally was. I'm not making that up, nor am I trying to put down people's heritage. It's the truth of the matter. But ultimately, they would stay instead of coming back for the winter, you know, go only during the nice times and then get their money and come back. Several would decide to stay there in Scotland and in Upper England until the next year. Maybe they could just winter there in the islands and then come back, you know, pillage some more and then head back over. And
right.
That caused them to set up roots. And we all know that kind of stuff. But what we don't know is how did that work politically with all of England, and how did English stuff deal with the Vikings? And the last kingdom is really, really centered around that. Vikings and English and how they came together or broke apart or fought each other politically. And the Shogun is how, you know, the West comes to the East and with the church and is inserted itself in that politics in a really kind of not really explored history era time of Japan via film. And I like that. It's a fictional thing, obviously, but it gives us some insight to what's going on in that kind of world in the same way Last Kingdom did.
Yeah.
I like it. Still going to watch it. Matter of fact, I'm going to watch it tonight when I go to bed, watch another episode. But we are on our film or media talk. So let's jump into our movie of the week this week.
Okay. All right. This week we watched Blast from the Past from 1999. Tonight we're going to party. Starring Brendan Fraser and Alicia Silverstone, also with Christopher Walken, Sissy Spacek, Dave Foley, and a handful of others. Not many. This is a small cast.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small film.
Yeah.
I thought this... we say sometimes we don't have a lot to say about the thing. I'm going to repeat that and say I don't have a lot to say here, except very simple words. I think it was cute and sweet, maybe. I guess that's the word. It's basic in its storytelling. It feels like a simple 90s, teen, early 20s show, right? And a typical Brandon Fraser or Alicia Silverstone film that they would make back in that time period. That's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just kind of what it is. Encino Man and Clueless and things like that.
This is just a couple years after The Mummy and George of the Jungle and Clueless, and I don't know what other things I've seen Alicia Silverstone in. Maybe I think this is still pre Batman and Robin. No, it's after Batman and Robin.
Okay.
I'm surprised she got any acting jobs after that.
After that.
But that was not her fault.
No. Everybody. I don't think Chris O'Donnell got any acting after that one, but you know,
that's true. And
George Clooney certainly did.
Obviously George Clooney did fine.
Yeah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was also in that one.
But, right.
We won't go into that one. How's that?
This was interesting. I couldn't tell, especially toward the end, I couldn't quite tell whether the movie was trying to say anything, whether or what that was. I think in the last, in the denouement, the like last 20 minutes when Alicia Silverstone starts narrating, in voiceover, then it got to like, here's the conclusion, here's the message, which was a little strange. So I don't know if I've seen this movie from start to finish. I've definitely seen the end parts, because I remembered some of those as they were happening, and I remembered some of them before we watched it. Like, I remember the conversation between Alicia Silverstone and Dave Foley, where they're talking about what a gentleman is and the things that he does, and I remember him talking about his dance lessons and stuff, and all of that is basically the last 40 minutes, I think, or half hour of the movie. I did not remember so much time in the bunker, in the fallout shelter.
There was a good third, like, of the film was, yeah.
At least a third, if not half, the movie is all him and his parents living in the fallout shelter. Mm-hmm. And this sort of, like, there's tension between the parents, but also he comes out like, you know, this like extreme sheltered homeschool kid almost.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
But without any, like,
says the homeschool kid, right?
exactly. Without any like religious component to that, which
yeah, right,
was, you know, becoming less common in popular media by the 90s, obviously.
Sure.
And yeah, there was, I wish I could remember now what it was. There was at least one moment where something happened and hit me the right way, where I laughed out loud at it a couple times when I kept mm-hmm. thinking about it. I don't remember now what it was. I watched this movie kind of late after we played Baldur's Gate last night. Yeah. But
Laughed at, there was one that I absolutely laughed at while I was watching it. And I don't know why, it just hit me, the one. It's 'cause her roommate, the main character's roommate, played by he's the Kids in the Hall guy.
Dave Foley,
which I love. I love Dave Foley and a lot of the things he does. But he's gay. And mm-hmm. he tells him he's gay at one point, and it just kind of flies over his head, obviously. But then late in the show, near the end, he yells goodbye to him and says, "And thanks for always being happy." And then she looks over and says, "Gay." And he's like, "Oh, okay." Yeah. I laughed out loud.
I remembered that joke, so it wasn't that one, but I don't know. It was something. There's a lot of sort of silly gags like that. I laughed pretty hard when they're at the club and he dances with these two random blondes, and I'm like, boy, this movie was perfectly timed in the like year, maybe 2 years, that pop culture got super into Swing.
Yeah, with like Zoot Suit Riot, right? Like, and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a lot of Cherry Pop and Daddy songs.
Cherry Pop and Daddy's, yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is perfect. Like, if he went, I mean, maybe even he goes into the bunker in the early 60s. I feel like that's already starting to go out. But his parents, right, would have been just the right age.
Yeah.
I remember being in high school and I got a little into it. My oldest younger sister and her husband were really into it when we were all like around that age, high school or a little after. I remember us, you know, showing my grandparents, who were, I want to say, born in like 24 and 28, somewhere around that. So they were both like teenagers or a little past when like World War II happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying like, oh, it's like Jitterbug. It's basically Jitterbug. Mm-hmm. Like most of the, like what we called swing dancing in the late 90s. And so he's doing all this stuff with the twirls, and he's picking her up and, you know, spinning her over his arm and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is perfect, because like in 6 months that fad was done. Like it was was past. We were on to something new. But just in this brief span of time, he comes, like, if he had come out of a bunker from the 60s, like into 2005, when people were doing bump and grind and whatever, like he would have had no idea, like been completely out. And I mean, there's some overlap with different styles of dance, right? There's rhythm.
To be fair, it could be cause and effect type thing too. It's that Brandon Fraser and Alicia Silverstone were pretty popular actors at the time. So what made the swing come back with Cherry Poppin' Days and stuff? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them could be that there's also a major movie where Brandon Fraser is doing swing and they're playing a swing song from Cherry Poppin' Days. Like, not saying that this film caused that fad, but like it probably helped add to its popularity. Maybe. You know what I mean?
So I know there was a movie that we should maybe watch called Swing Kids.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have not.
I think it's Christian Bale.
Okay.
He's still pretty young. It's like probably within a decade of Newsies. And it's period. Like, it's during World War II, where he and his friends are swing kids. Like, they're somewhere like in Germany, and they're, you know, sort of rebelling against the rise of the Socialist Party by, you know, in these underground dance halls doing swing music, which is swing dancing music, which is not, you know, not allowed and whatever. I don't remember the details, but I feel like that came out around this time and probably helped contribute to that whole thing. But anyway, yeah, I don't have a lot to say about this movie. I asked our buddy Peter whether he wanted to come on, or if he remembered, you know, if there was any particular reason that he suggested this movie. He said he thought of it because somebody was talking about Hot Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I don't remember that conversation happening recently. I do remember back in the time of me living in the camper, but it was the first winter that I did this. It was 21, the late 21 or early 22. I went to Waco, Texas, where they have the Dr. Pepper Museum, and one of the exhibits there is about how people used to drink Hot Dr. Pepper. It was like some marketing thing. People would heat it up and put it in thermoses, and I tried it because the tour, the ticket for the tour came with a drink ticket, and in the little cafe soda parlor place where they where you could use that ticket, they had Hot Dr. Pepper, and it was like heated up with a lemon slice, and I was like, all right, I'll try this. Let's see, you know, it was a weird it thing. Tastes exactly like you took Dr. Pepper and heated it up. Like,
okay.
It's the most ridiculous thing. I'm like, well, I'll drink this because I paid for it, but it's like, there's nothing remarkable about it at all. Like, shocker, that's never happened since, right? Like,
yeah, right.
Nobody talks about drinking warm Mountain Dew or Coke or Diet Coke or anything like that. Like, it's
because it wasn't good, right? Yeah.
I mean, it didn't make it any better. Like, it was still just soda, except now it's warm. Like, it's weird. And so you see Christopher Walken early in the movie, like, heating it up on the stove when they first go down into the shelter. And like, this is, it's a weird, weird moment in history.
I like, something I did like about this film, besides it just being like a stereotypical kind of film that I mentioned before, these two characters or actors, is Walken wasn't really being Walken. I think at some point in his career, he's like, where everyone was hiring him to do him, so he just did that. And
right.
I think this was him doing a part. And maybe I just haven't watched enough classic Christopher Walken stuff, but He did have obviously some of his natural mannerisms, but it wasn't like, oh my God, this is that character, you know.
There's a scene or two where he's doing a little bit of, hey, wow, you know, kind of stuff. Yeah. But not to the SNL degree. And right. I don't really know. I found him very distracting in Dune. I don't remember if we talked about that.
I think he was poorly cast in Dune for sure. They could have been
when we talked about Dune 2. Same, yes. even worse in the live action Jungle Book. I have a long list of issues with that film, but Christopher Walken as King Louis was particularly off-putting. Before we saw it, I joked about him doing, you know, his Christopher Walken voice as King Louis, and what he did was not very far off from that. And I'm like, this is what a mistake. This was, but no, in this movie, he was playing this character. He was not Christopher Walken very hard,
which was good, right? Because I didn't want him to be, considering how much of a kind of a major person he was character in this thing. It would have been like disappointing to see that because he would detract from all the other characters that were around him. Namely that the mom was actually the interesting character in the bunker, which I liked her
because
she was she was fun, going crazy slowly type thing. But I didn't mind the in the bunker parts being long because it was fun and they never really tried to make them bad people like the parents. Like they were just doing their thing and it was amusing and fun and quaint, you know, and cute. And then when they, you know, when he's being raised or growing up, it was cute and all they kept showing the stuff up top going all to hell, which was, you know, fun. I enjoyed the religious cult that came from him coming up out of the ground.
That was so weird.
It was so funny, so goofy. It's like, because when they show in the 60s, that guy gets his job at the soda shop, ice cream shop that's there. And he's like,
working for his mom.
Yeah, $1.15. And then it just kind of slowly goes to pot. And then you end up with the guy it is. Like, that was just really funny. It's just silly kind of funniness. And then the little jokes about don't go in the adult bookstore or video store because it's got invisible poison gas.
Invisible poison gas.
Yeah. That was fun. And Brandon Fraser did play all the way through a very nice, kind, you know, we say pure person. And they didn't really go to making fun of him gags. I really felt the whole show was going to be about, you know, making him look like a dummy and an idiot. But yeah, they didn't. It made him they were okay with like making him the good guy, you know, and how actually the world isn't as good as the good guy is, you know, and when you have a good guy around, you think it's weird type stuff, which I appreciated. And the chemistry between him and Alicia Silverstone was fine, but it wasn't, if anything, it felt like that their relationship solidified only because of jealousy, not necessarily because, you know, he was a good guy. He is a good guy and she did notice it. And saw it finally because of the jealousy, but it's not like the jealousy was the thing or the good guy is the thing that like, oh man, he's a good guy. I should really, I'm falling in love with him because he's a good guy. It's like, I better keep this guy because someone else is going to take him type thing. And so it didn't endear me to Alicia Silverstone's character much at all.
It's sort of a slow burn. Like she doesn't really realize that she cares for him until she calls, social services on him.
Are you a psychologist? I'm being chased around. There's a good line. I'm getting chased around by a psychologist. Oh, that happens.
That happens.
Yeah. From the crazy guy. So anyway, it's not a complicated film. It's exactly what the description says. I did appreciate how they handled some things in the story, like money. How is he going to get anything to do anything without spending the entire show focusing on money? They did the baseball cards thing and stuff.
Yeah, it's like a very, it's not quite Harry Potter level of like hand wave away the money. Like the money is part of the story, but it's very convenient that like, oh, all the, you know, the stuff, these baseball cards are super are worth thousands a piece, which is all very kind of absurd. I was definitely expecting, like, you know, Sissy's Basic gives him money to shop for groceries, and I'm like, that's not gonna be, she's gonna have given him $20, which would have, you know, filled a whole cart in 1962 or whatever, and, you know, he's gonna go and it's gonna get him like three things. Well, it would get him two things now. In 99, it would probably get him like five or six things.
Yeah, right.
And instead, it's just like, you know, oh, whatever, you know, somehow they had, you know, somehow she gave him $3,000 for groceries.
Like, well, for more than groceries. Because remember, because that, right, that's, that was actually the bit, was that he goes, he bought ground beef.
He has to restock the bunker, right?
Yeah, but that was the bit that I actually was going to say I really appreciated, was that when he went to buy all the ground beef, she didn't just give him three. He said, Mom gave me $3,000, and I'm supposed to buy, like, aquamarine batteries or, like, marine batteries and large photo cells or something like that and air filtration systems. So it wasn't just they had, like, saved their $3,000 for major, major equipment purchases. Right. And I was like, oh, okay, that helped why he had $3,000 at all, which would have been something like $10,000 or something more than that. Right. So, yeah, I just appreciated how they did the little gag with money, and then they moved on from it and kind of used it with here and there. Didn't focus on that. Overall, I liked it. I am... it was one I missed, as we do a lot with this show, how kind of one of the things we started with this, it is one I missed that I just didn't see. And there's a lot of these kind of things. And now I got to see it. So, yeah, thumbs up. It was fine. Yeah. There are better films in this era or genre or whatever. It's nothing that you must go out and see. But I wasn't hurt by watching it. I wasn't like, no, guy wasted time type thing. Yeah, you know?
It was fine. It was
fine. I'd give it a 5 out of 10, you know?
Yeah, five or six, something like that.
Yeah. So, okay. You know.
All right. So it's your week.
Oh, my goodness. What do we get to watch on my week thing? I think there was something on your list that I was going to pick. I keep picking off of your list because you keep adding to it. And I need
when I'm listening to podcasts and stuff, I go, huh, that's a movie I could add to the list.
I can add that one. Well, it's not going to be A Knight's Tale, I can tell you that much, which you have on your list in that one. I mean, I can't stand that film.
I feel like knowing... I hated that movie when I first saw it, but I think knowing what it is, I could probably appreciate it.
Maybe, and that's why we'll watch it. Not this time, but at some time. Because it is on your list. I have a feeling I should watch a really bad movie. I think I want to watch a really bad movie. So we're going to watch The Barbarians. And Barbarians. Beware.
What's that?
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I saw the trailer for it and saw it on like Netflix or something. It's an old, I want to say 80s fantasy with two muscle bound bodybuilders as the main characters. And
some former wrestlers / bodybuilders, quote unquote, acting.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. This looks like a terrible film.
Tell me the title again.
The Barbarians. Now, I put it on this list because knowing what it is, it's not a movie that I'm excited to watch. Ooh, I missed it or something like that. Like, I want to watch a silly movie. Sometimes you want to watch a really dumb movie, and hopefully those movies are so bad that they're funny or good.
Now, you're talking about the one from 1987.
It's got to be. Yeah, definitely 80s.
Because there's one with the same title from 1960, but that's probably not the one you mean.
No. This one's definitely an 80s thing. I mean, they even look like 80s wrestlers. Yeah, it's
got some what are clearly wrestlers on the poster.
Yeah, that's definitely. Or they picked them up when they were out recruiting on Venice Beach in California.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, you guys got some charisma and you're fun out here. We can put you in a movie. I'm sure people who are fans of those twins are like, no, man, they're just great actors, but whatever.
It's got a 5.0 out of 10 on IMDb. Oh,
I'm actually surprised. Okay, I thought it was
good. I'm surprised it's that high.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe it's got... I mean, we just gave this one a 5 out of 10, so maybe it's that one. That could be bad news, actually, because what I'm looking for is something that's so bad it's good. You know, maybe. But we'll see. Okay, The Barbarians. That's
okay.
That's all right. Great. Maybe we should drink a little bit, too, and watch that show and drunken Twitter.
Seems smart.
Or, do we call it Drunken X now? It's not called Drunken Twitter anymore?
No.
your sound of disgust in your voice.
It's still like the concept of drunk Twitter is I almost said conceptual, which is a meaningless statement. I'm using the same word at the beginning and the end. It's the idea. Like, we call it drunk Twitter because we used it when we first started using it, when it was GroupMe, we used it the way people use Twitter in the early days.
Wait, real quick. There's people listening who have no idea what we're talking about when we say drunk
Twitter is what we call our group chat. Okay. It's now a Discord server. It started as a GroupMe server, which is and was a mobile app that you can interface with via text, right? So if you don't have a smartphone, which I'm sort of guessing there might still be a couple people out there who don't, you get a number, like a phone number that represents the group chat, and you just text into it, and you know, other people can also text in it. They can use the mobile app, they can use the web app, and so on. We switched it to Discord, but we switched the name at some point to Drunk Twitter because we would use it to coordinate when people were going out to the bars, when all of us lived in Bloomington.
We're much younger.
And we're younger. And also because it was like, we would just say random stuff on it the way that people used to do on Twitter.
And now it's not, and Dennis is refusing to call it Drunk X.
Yeah. Why would I?
No, I'm not doing it, Elon. He's not infecting our chat.
What? Why should I change? He's the one who sucks.
That's true.
A little office space for you.
Awesome.
Okay, we've got a little bit of time. Let's. I was going to maybe talk about the Civil War movie, but I haven't seen it, and I assume you haven't either. Because just
no, I don't know. I get I see that title, and it makes me scared to even push a button to find out what it is, with political climate the way it is.
Right. Well, it's a lot of people were mad about it before it came out, which is like, you're just assuming what it is, and you're mad about that. That's stupid.
Which I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just don't want to click it, you know, or anything.
Yeah. It appears to be a fictional. Well, obviously fictional, but a second civil war in the United States.
So it is about the thing people are worried about?
I don't think it is. I think it's just about, that. It's like here's a thing. But in the trailer you see that Texas and California are in an alliance. Right.
Wow, that's right. They're implausible.
Exactly, right? So people are pissed, and then other people are like, this is fiction. Like, do you understand what fiction means? And it's just a weird thing. But we'll wait to talk about that until we've at least one of us has actually seen it. So to circle back to board games, Board Game Arena has added Formula D. I assume you've played Formula D.
Depends. Is it Formula D or Formula D?
I don't know what you're saying.
Isn't there Formula D-E and then Formula D?
Day?
Day? Is that how they say it?
The original game is French, and it's Formula Day, D-E. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
I don't speak
French. And the Formula D is just the English version re-release of that. It's a car racing game. But you've played it, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Have you played it with the advanced rules?
Thank God, no. Like, probably I've not. Seen them. Yeah. I've read the rules and watched a couple of people play.
And I did that once with our friends Pat and Pete, Peter, because they both love that game. And I did it in a tournament at Gen Con. There's one guy who runs a tournament. He loves this game, and he has custom giant boards. So they're like mats that roll out so that you can use like micro machines instead of the little car. So it's a giant thing, and it's great and all that. But I have been playing the heck out of Heat, or Heat Pedal to the Metal is the full title, which is the new car racing game from, I'm not going to remember the publisher, that I didn't like at first. And I think you maybe still don't really like, but I've been playing it a lot on Board Game Arena, and now I'm in my second game of Formula D, and I really just don't like it.
I really just don't like it.
I have more thoughts than that, but I want to hear if you have thoughts on this.
This is a bad thing to ask me. Especially if our buddy Pat ever listens to this show, because he knows my opinions on this one. I'm not a fan of Formula D, however you spell it. So it's the joke around the group that I won't play anything that's a racing game.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me back up and ask whether you like any kind of racing board game.
Yeah, it's not the racing board game. In general, I'm not a big racing fan theme. It's the theme of racing that I'm not a real fan of.
Okay.
And I don't know, I enjoy going to the Indianapolis 500, and I enjoy going to the Brickyard 400.
I was
going to
say, between the two of us, you seem the more likely to appreciate racing in general.
I
went to the horse races once with my grandparents, and otherwise have never seen any kind of racing of any style.
Yeah. I've been to several of those events, you know, the biggest racing events around. I've been to several of those, but it's always been just circumstance. And then the fact that I live in Indiana and know a lot of people in Indianapolis and that go to these things regularly. But I appreciate it, and I like it, and I do enjoy going, especially going with friends. I've been to several times to the Indianapolis 500 with our buddy Pat, and it's always a wonderful, really fun experience. But in so much of as going to an event with friends is, right? And sure. I can really watch a thing and say, I don't know anything what's going on, but I like to cheer on a guy, and I'll pick a thing out and say, like, maybe I don't watch any high school basketball ever, but I'll go to a game, pick a team, and really cheer on one player or one team and just kind of like do that thing and get into it for that thing. I can do that. That's what I have the ability to do and to enjoy myself. So I don't want to disparage racing. That's what I said up front. It's just not my thing to get into. It's just not my thing. Sure. So when a theme comes across and it's, you get a basic ass card deck builder game and it's got an X-Men skin on it, I'm like, ooh, I want to see it because I love X-Men, you know, and it can be terrible, but I give it a benefit of the doubt because it's X-Men. You give a basic ass card game and it's got a racing theme, I'm like, eh, I don't like it because, okay. I mean, for the same reason, not sure. Because the game is bad. It's just because I'm not going to pick a racing game if I pick a thing. Okay. There, I've now explained to you and the world why I get that stigma in the group of I don't like racing games. Now, when you play a game and it has good mechanics, yeah, I like it. Absolutely like it. Heat is that example. I enjoy Heat. I enjoyed it a lot better after I played with our buddy Zahn, which isn't always the case because he can be very chaotic in his play style. But right. I started to get in my head a lot with the math of it all. What card you have, what's in my discard pile, how many things I had, what's the odds of playing this, what's the odds of the one coming up.
Sure, yeah.
I did a lot of that. But playing with Zahn, there's still that. But he gave this different mentality of, like, you have to play this game to the hilt all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, don't care about whatever. Just go at it. And I was like, fine. And I played, like, two times in a row like that, and I did considerably better. Yeah. Like, every time. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just playing every turn to the maximum. And sometimes I'll think about, okay, I know I've got a four coming up. Okay, that's helpful. But for the most part, just play it to the hilt and do your best. And it's been so much more enjoyable, so much more fun. A lot of the mechanics are just simple and easy to know. And then I've branched out and played the advanced versions of it with the weather track conditions and advanced cards and stuff. And it only adds to make it better. It really does. You definitely don't want to play that for your first couple games, but it doesn't add like a million different mechanics and a million different stuff that you have to think about every turn. It just adds like two different cards that you might have to your draw pool. And a few different rules around the track. That's about it. And those are all optional. Formula D, on the other hand, is so complicated and so rules heavy and so finicky with every little thing. And then you can play that game, and it's encouraged to play that game as a jerk, like blocking off people and causing people to not have things and jamming speedways. And you really have to maximize everything. And then you add in the advanced rules, and it's that times 10. Add on to that, by the time the first lap comes in Formula D, I am just tired of playing. Like, I just don't want it anymore. You know, it's that thing that you and I will have sometimes where if you're not having a good time for the first half, you're just going to hate life for the rest. Right?
Right.
And Formula D absolutely is that way for me. I would say it's a good game for people who like a lot of rules and they like a lot of, you know, detailed stuff to their racing and they want to tweak shocks and down thrust and, you know, wheel types and stuff like that. Okay, cool. That's good for you. For me, absolutely not. Like, it's just way too many rules, way too many little things, too aggressive anti-play. Whereas Heat helps people if you're in the last couple places. You know, it's every map is engineered so that there's catch-up mechanics that people can get together unless you really screw up. And most games, as long as you're playing moderately, are pretty close. There's always, you know, in even a five-player game, there's three people close at the end, and they're very, who knows, can win. So in that thing, I know I said a lot on my turn, but definitely Heat, hands down, and I enjoy it. And it's a racing game because the mechanics are good, and minus the skin doesn't really matter. It does matter, but you know what I mean. How about you? You said that you really weren't into Formula D. Is it because there's too much, or is it, what's your reason for not liking it? And then why do you like Heat? Do you like, I mean, would you play Heat as optionally if someone comes to town and you're like, let's play Heat?
Yeah, I think in person, Heat is a much easier game to play. I don't know about with the advanced like weather conditions and stuff, but I still feel like that's just, it's just in setup, right? You do the things and you put the little effects on the board and you're good. Then you just go. I don't know if those change, how often that is, but otherwise, like, you're drawing cards, you're doing the thing. Formula D, in person, we always played, like when we played at Trotsky's, we always played the basic rules. So it's only one kind of damage that you take if you don't. They're very similar in the sense of they're both car racing games. They both have a thing that you do to move your car and rules for going around corners. Except that Formula D is a dice game and Heat is a card game. So on your turn in Formula D, you pick what gear you're in, just like you do in Heat. But the gear you're in Formula D only determines what die you roll. And their corners, rather than the corners having a checkpoint, like one line, the way they do in Heat, the corners in Formula D are a range, right? Like, there's a range, this is the whole corner. And depending on how long the corner is or how sharp it is, you have to end your turn in that corner that many times. And however much you go past it, you take damage. In the advanced rules, like, if you downshift too hard to make sure that you stop in that corner, you take damage on your gearbox. If you overshoot the corner, you take damage to your tires. And there's also something else that, like, if you roll and you don't go far enough in your roll, you'll take a different, like, damage to the engine or something like that. In Board Game Arena, all of that, like, admin is taken care of for you, right? You don't have to count the spaces. I remember doing that a lot playing Formula D. Like, okay, I can move 12. And there are specific restrictions on lane changes, right? There are more lanes. The heat tracks only have two lanes. And you can just move. You can move. Like, there's maybe a rule where you can't zigzag. Like, if you change lanes to the left, you can't change to the right in the same but I don't know. I think I'm actually thinking of a different game. I'm thinking of Automobiles, which we played for a while. We played a lot before Heat came out and after we started playing on Board Game Arena, because Formula D wasn't on Board Game Arena. Automobiles, not to complicate this discussion too much, but that's an AEG game that's bag building. Like, you pick the tiles into your bag and you pull them out at random to determine how far you go. It's actually been long enough since I played that I don't even remember how I would rank this in between these other racing games. But because of the dice in Formula D, I feel like I'm coming into this corner. Okay, if I roll this, and it's the interface in Board Game Arena is really nice. Like, when I'm picking between what gear, what die I'm going to use for which gear, it'll highlight on the track my range. Right. If I'm going to roll this die, here's the range. Right. Because they're custom polyhedral dice.
Yeah.
Right. If I stay in fourth gear, here's the range of squares on the track that I'm going to land in. I have like three spots at the very low end where I won't overshoot this corner. So that gear is too high. I got to go down one. I'm like, OK, this one is going to be here. I have a pretty good chance. Like, you can kind of get a sense for it.
Yeah.
But then you're still rolling a die. Right. So you're like, oh, here I've got a 50% chance or even higher of landing in the corner where I'm supposed to. And then I'll roll where I'm definitely going to overshoot because I rolled too high. Or I'm like, okay, this one will get me just into that corner. And then I roll short and I'm down a whole turn. And there are no catch-up mechanics, I don't think. None that I've seen. So we have these races where I'm half a lap behind the person in front of me. Like, there's no chance I'm even going to get close.
Yeah.
Where in Heat, because it's cards, like, I feel like there's much, much less randomness. Like, there's still the boost, and you can't discard stress cards. So at some point you're going to have to play them, and you're going to have to draw cards randomly and hope. I mean, the last race that we played, I ended up winning because I did a boost after my turn at the very end and pulled a four. And that got me the furthest forward after the finish line to win. And I'm like, I won, but that was a cheap, cheesy way of winning. Yeah. But most of the time, like, you get, you know, you don't have great cards and you get stuck in a corner. You know, you can't, in the long stretch with no corners, you'll lose a lot of place. Like, the people in front will get way ahead of you, but if you're in last place, you get adrenaline, right? You get a bonus movement, and there's slipstreaming. So and you always go, I think both games are this way, you always play from first position to last position, right? Yeah. So the person in first always moves first. That means the person in first can never slipstream, so there's right. always, like, if you can get right behind them, then you can take the lead. But now you're going to go first and somebody will take the lead on you. Like, it feels very, it feels much more designed to be competitive, right? For, as you said, for the game to be very close, which makes the game more exciting, which, you know, makes it, sure, a little more Mario Kart, a little more, it's a word I'm looking for. Maybe a little less skill based, but there's enough randomness in both of these games, and there feels like much, much more randomness in Formula D that, like, you want that. You don't want, I mean, sure, you want to win, but, like, these are board games. We're not playing for money. You want everybody to have a good time. And if somebody is a lap behind for a race that if you were going to play in real life would take a couple hours, like, you don't want somebody, I don't want to be stuck at a table. And we've talked about this before. I don't want to be stuck at a table for an hour knowing that I have no chance of winning because I'm so far behind.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen to anybody else that I'm playing with either, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not fun for anybody. I don't want to win and have my opponent be so far behind that it's meaningless.
Yeah.
Anyway, I ranted about that long enough.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree with it. I any game that's like that, that has that problem, you know, I don't want that to be a thing. So I will never probably ever play Formula D again. Again, I don't want to say it's a bad game. Definitely not for me. Add on that the skin.
It's weird because it used to be a classic. Like, here's a cool thing. Here's a board game, but that's car racing, and it's actually car racing. It's not, you know, some old Milton Bradley card game that, you know, just has cars on the cards. Cards. But yeah.
So anyway, for Heat, definitely a plus. I think we're up on time here, but one thing I wanted to say is I'm going to say for next week is that I've been working on trying to get my original NES console de-yellowed, because over time they get yellow.
I follow a guy on YouTube who does stuff like that. He puts it in a plastic tote with hydrogen peroxide, I think, and some UV lights.
Yeah, there's different ways, right?
Different that people techniques. Are,
yeah. I've done some. Mine's pretty yellowed. There's a complicated thing. I had to buy another one to replace my other one. It's a long story that I won't go into here. But I'm currently in possession. I have a lot of old consoles that work, and I use them. And that's my favorite. That actually gets more. My second favorite to the SNES gets a lot of use. So I want it to look nice.
I bet when you were like 12, you got pissed off at that dog in Duck Hunt and just kicked your NES, and you had to save up your paper out money to buy a new one.
Well said. That feels like 60% of most people in the world, right? It was not. I actually didn't get one of these for a very, very long time until I was a little older. Because I didn't have a lot of money as a kid, they were $100, which if you look at it on the inflation, it's $500. So if you think that buying a console now is expensive, it's the same relative price.
It always has been.
Yeah. I
would be the same, except that some of my dad's coworkers at the time heard that we didn't have one. I had just two siblings at the time, my two sisters. And she was like, "Your kids don't have a Nintendo?" And I don't know if they pitched in for or what the actual story was, but we got it for Christmas one year. And it was the big, like, I'm sure I've talked about this before. Like, it was the big kit with Duck Hunt and the light gun and two controllers.
Yeah.
And so I grew up thinking it was weird that consoles were sold with only one controller. I was like, why? How can we play? We've got to buy another controller?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I just said the thing about inflation and stuff, that there was a very big difference between then and now, is that they came with two controllers and a game. And now they don't come with, they come with one controller and no game. So that's
right.
Unless you buy the expanded packages, which cost like $200 extra, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway. Yeah. But that's not my point here. As I wanted to say that the thing that I've seen that was the most miraculous and happens on almost everybody's in almost foolproof way is the use of something called Salon Care 40 Volume Cream. It's literally hair cream for salons. It's only like $20 or something. And you just, after just thoroughly cleaning any yellowed plastic product, so it's not just a Nintendo, they put cover it with this Salon Care stuff and wrap it in like
foil,
plastic wrap, saran wrap,
and
sit it out in the sun. Like, you know, you can use UV lights, but the most effective thing for everyone is just putting it in the sun for like 3 hours. And
I'm pretty sure there is UV light coming from the sun. So that
is correct. Tracks. And people will try to use black lights and stuff. And then like, it puts out some, but nowhere near what, like,
right,
just putting it in the sun. So anyway, I bought it. I'm saying it this week so that hopefully by next week I'll have tested this and come back and say, man, guys, it works. And I put my little product support behind a shampoo for this, but I'm really hoping that this works because there's a couple other old plastic stuff that I've got that's turned yellow toys or whatnot.
Right.
And the ones I've seen on all the YouTube stuff where people have lots of them actually tried this, it looks surprisingly good, like new type stuff. I know that today would have been a great day. I just got it in the mail today. It's been sunny here for 2 days, but I think our forecast is overcast and rainy for the next 4 to 5 days.
Yeah, it's supposed to cool down next week.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get some sun and I can try it out and report back. But I'm really, really hoping I'll put it to my Super Nintendo as well and some of my other plastic stuff that I've got. And I'm really excited for it. So and it's a, nice. I'm mostly excited for it that it's not like a $500 cost in a type thing. Very simple.
Yeah, the whole hydrogen peroxide thing seems like you need a lot of gear. Like if you're making restoration videos on YouTube, sure. But
sure.
For like your one thing project, yeah. That's
And that's pretty cool. I was telling somebody the other day, it's like, you know, I don't know if this thing is worthless or if I can ever, how hard it would be to hang this thing or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Nowadays, I've just decided before I do anything that might be difficult, I'm just going to YouTube it and somebody will have found a unique, interesting way to do something that I didn't think was possible before.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. Okay. So we'll report that next week. But that's, I think that's all time we got for the rest of the stuff.
All right.
We're going to watch a crazy, terrible show this week and report back on that one too.
Yeah. I'm also watching the new Fallout series.
Oh yeah. I got to get onto that one, but not till Shogun's caught up.
Okay. There are only 8 episodes of Shogun, but I get that they're long.
But I like them. So hopefully I can keep on.
It's I'm liking it so far. Our buddy Fox is over the moon about it. And I'm like, calm down. Really it's fine. Considering it's Amazon, it's pretty good.
That's a bold statement there, because you're right. Amazon's had some rough times.
Pretty poor tracker. Fox is comparing it to The Last of Us. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but
that's a real heavy lift if you're going to say that.
Yeah, Last of Us is HBO. It's also a game with a, I've never played it, but you know, it's a narrative game. It's a story game where Fallout's an open world game, so it's really more about. It's really more about capturing the vibe, which I feel like they've done. And I like Walton Goggins, right? He was in Justified, right? He's the sort of villain. I don't know how much Justified you watched. He's in this as a ghoul. I think you see him in the trailer, so that's not a spoiler.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So check that out when you want a break from Shogun or after you get cut off. It's binge, so it's... You know,
the thing is that like I like Shogun, so if I'm gonna pick right now, if I'm gonna pick anything to put, it's an hour long show, I'm definitely putting Shogun on.
Yeah, and it's not, and this is similar. Like it's also long episodes. It's not as heavy as Shogun, but it's still like, it's not like if you're not in the mood to watch Shogun, you watch like Archer or something. This is more similar to Shogun than something else. All right. Yeah, that's it. So where is my notes? Here we go. You've been listening to The Front Porch. This is episode 345. Thanks always to our friends at LRM Online. You can check them out for reviews on things. If you would like to email us and what? I don't have a funny bit for the...
Make fun of us about Formula D because we're lame.
Yeah, to tell haters. Us why we're filthy casuals for not liking Formula D over these other racing games for casuals. I said casuals again. It's a terrible, terrible bit. You can email us. That address is frontporchpod@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, frontporchpodcast.com, and find contact forms there to reach out to us. I also try to put notes to all of the games, movies, and TV series that we talked about so that you can find those for yourself. If you enjoy The Front Porch, please consider subscribing on the podcatcher of your choice. And while you're there, if you would leave us a review, we always appreciate that. It helps out a lot in the rankings. As always, thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Michael.
For The Front Porch.
Hi, everybody.
See you next time.